Welcome back to the Journal Review. This episode covers the January 2026 issue of the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. And we've got four papers to get through: an artificial intelligence meta-analysis, a long-term follow-up on a laser prophylaxis trial, a retrospective look at bleeding after nasolabial interpolation flaps, and a real-world study on reflectance confocal microscopy. Let's get into it. First up is a meta-analysis looking at ChatGPT's diagnostic accuracy in dermatology, specifically comparing text-based prompts against image-based prompts. This is a systematic review and meta-analysis, not a primary study, so the whole point is synthesizing what's already out there, rather than generating new patient data. The background here is familiar to all of us. Large language models are being thrown at every diagnostic problem in medicine, and dermatology, with its visual nature, is an obvious testing ground. But individual studies on ChatGPT's accuracy for skin lesions have been all over the map, and the authors reasonably conclude that's probably due to differences in methodology rather than a real signal about the tool itself. So they pulled 17 studies pulled from PubMed and Scopus, extracting variables like the skin condition tested, lesion classification, Fitzpatrick phototype, which ChatGPT model was used, and where the images came from. Public datasets versus private clinical sources. They looked at two flavors of accuracy, whether ChatGPT nailed the top diagnosis on its differential, and whether the correct answer showed up anywhere in the differential at all. Meta-analysis is really the only way to answer how good is this tool overall, when the primary literature is this fragmented. Pooling gives you power and lets you formally test which variables are driving the variability, which a single study can't do. The results are genuinely useful for setting expectations. The newer model, ChatGPT 4.0, significantly outperformed the older ChatGPT 4, with top diagnosis accuracy jumping from under 40% to roughly 2/3 correct, and differential accuracy climbing from about 60% to about 76%. A real, clinically meaningful jump, likely reflecting genuinely improved multimodal reasoning in the newer model. Interestingly, visual prompts actually beat textual prompts overall, around 70% versus 65%. But the regression model told a more nuanced story. When you control for other variables, visual analysis was independently associated with significantly lower odds of correct differential diagnosis compared to text. So the raw numbers and the adjusted analysis pull in different directions here, which the authors don't fully reconcile. And I'd flag that as something to interpret cautiously, rather than take at face value. The most clinically important finding, frankly, is the equity signal. Accuracy dropped significantly for darker skin types, going from about 78% in lighter phototypes down to about 66% in Fitzpatrick 3 and above. That's not a rounding artifact. That's a meaningful performance gap. Accuracy also improved significantly year over year as models matured, and public datasets performed roughly comparably to private clinical sources. The authors are upfront about the limitations. Heterogeneity across these 17 studies was very high, meaning the pooled numbers should be read as a general trend rather than a precise point estimate, and no publication bias was detected. But that doesn't rescue you from apples to oranges comparisons in prompt engineering and lesion mix. Practical takeaway: this is interesting, not practice changing. Nothing here suggests you should be recommending ChatGPT as a standalone diagnostic tool to patients or trainees. If anything, the skin of color performance gap is the single most actionable data point, a reason to be explicitly cautious about equity implications before any of these tools get closer to clinical deployment. Second article, a 5-year follow-up on a randomized controlled trial of fractionated laser resurfacing as prophylaxis against actinic neoplasia. This is a continuation of a study most of you may already know. The group has published 6-month and 3-year data previously, and this brief report extends the observation window out to 66 months. The biological premise is that aged, sun-damaged skin loses fibroblast-derived insulin-like growth factor 1 signaling to keratinocytes, and that controlled wounding, in this case fractionated laser resurfacing, recruits non-senescent fibroblasts that restore that signaling and correct the precancerous ultraviolet B response. The design is an investigator-initiated, single-site, randomized, single-blinded intrapatient trial. Each of 48 elderly volunteers, overwhelmingly male with Fitzpatrick types 1 and 2, had one forearm treated with a single session of fractionated laser resurfacing, while the other arm served as an untreated internal control. This within-patient design is a smart methodological choice for a prophylaxis question like this. Using each patient as their own control eliminates a huge amount of interpatient variability in sun exposure history, skin type, and field cancerization burden. So you need a much smaller sample to detect a real effect than you would with a between-patient design. The results are striking for their durability. Before treatment, actinic keratosis counts were essentially balanced between arms, a ratio around 1.3, confirming randomness. Within 3 months of treatment, that ratio dropped below 0.5, and it stayed there, significantly below baseline at every single time point all the way out to 66 months, over 5 years of sustained protection from a single treatment session. On the non-melanoma skin cancer side, at the 66-month mark, the untreated arms had accumulated far more lesions than the treated arms. 34 skin cancers on treated arms versus, actually reversed, let me be precise, the treated arms showed fewer, with the untreated arms carrying the greater burden, and among the basal cell carcinomas identified, the great majority were superficial rather than nodular. The author's conclusion is straightforward. A single fractionated laser session appears to provide durable, multi-year chemo prevention-like protection against actinic keratosis and skin cancer development. The honest limitations here are significant. Single-site cohort of mostly elderly white men with lighter skin types, so generalizability to women, to skin of color, or to younger high-risk patients like transplant recipients is unknown. It's also a forearm model, not face or scalp, where anatomy and cosmetic tolerance for wounding differ substantially. Practical takeaway, this is interesting and encouraging, but I'd stop short of calling it practice-changing yet. It's a proof of concept that a single ablative fractional treatment can meaningfully suppress field actinic damage for over 5 years, which is a compelling data point for thinking about laser resurfacing as an adjunct in high-risk actinically damaged patients. But the population studied is narrow, and this hasn't been tested against our standard field therapies head-to-head. And I'd call this one close to practice changing at the level of patient counseling. Overall bleeding risk with this flap remains low and manageable in office, so there's no reason to abandon the technique broadly. But patients on combined anticoagulant plus antiplatelet therapy represent a genuinely distinct high-risk subgroup deserving specific preoperative counseling, perhaps closer perioperative coordination with prescribing physicians, and a lower threshold for enhanced hemostasis and closer follow-up. Fourth and final article, a prospective real-life study on reflectance confocal microscopy, or RCM, and its ability to reduce unnecessary biopsies in both adults and children. This is an original prospective single-center study, not a randomized trial. The authors are explicit that this was an uncontrolled, real-world clinical implementation study. The clinical gap they're addressing is one we all feel. The number needed to biopsy to catch one skin cancer remains high, and biopsy carries real costs. For kids in particular, sedation or general anesthesia is sometimes required, making non-invasive alternatives especially valuable in that population. Reflectance confocal microscopy sits between dermoscopy and histopathology, giving quasi-histologic resolution non-invasively, but most of its supporting evidence to date comes from specialized skin cancer units rather than everyday general dermatology practice. So the design choice here, a prospective consecutive case study pulling from both general dermatologists and skin cancer specialists across a large academic department, was specifically meant to test whether the technology's benefits generalize beyond expert referral centers, which is a sensible and clinically important question that a controlled trial in a single specialized unit couldn't answer. They enrolled 1,285 equivocal lesions from just under 900 patients over roughly 3 years, the vast majority adults, but with a meaningful pediatric subgroup. Overall, reflectance confocal microscopy to histopathology concordance for specific diagnosis was about 70%, and concordance was significantly better in older patients, head and neck locations, non-pigmented lesions, and non-melanocytic lesions. Basal cell carcinoma in particular performed very well, with sensitivity around 99% and specificity around 92%. Melanoma detection was also excellent from the sensitivity standpoint, essentially catching all melanomas in the biopsied cohort, though specificity and positive predictive value were lower, meaning plenty of benign pigmented lesions still triggered a biopsy recommendation, which is exactly the trade-off you'd want for a rule-out tool applied to melanocytic lesions. The headline number is the biopsy-sparing rate. Nearly 59% of all referred lesions were spared a biopsy after reflectance confocal microscopy evaluation, and in the pediatric subgroup, that number climbed to an impressive 88%. Biopsies were saved more often in younger patients, pigmented and melanocytic lesions, and when referrals came from general dermatologists rather than skin cancer specialists. Which makes sense, since general dermatologists are presumably referring a lower pretest probability population to begin with. Only 3 lesions initially called benign on reflectance confocal microscopy turned out later to be malignant, which is a reassuringly small miss rate given the scale of the cohort. The author's own limitations are worth repeating plainly. This was single center. Not every lesion had histopathologic confirmation, since some were simply followed clinically. And the pediatric group, while showing the most dramatic benefit, was still a relatively small absolute number of patients. Practical takeaway: this one leans toward practice changing, at least for anyone with access to the technology or considering acquiring it. The biopsy-sparing numbers, especially in children where avoiding sedation is a real clinical win, and the strong performance specifically for basal cell carcinoma, make a solid case for incorporating reflectance confocal microscopy into equivocal lesion workflows, with the caveat that pigmented and melanocytic lesions still carry a real miss rate on the malignant side and shouldn't be overtrusted to rule out melanoma outright. That wraps this month's 4 papers, an AI diagnostic tool that still needs equity fixes before it's clinic ready. Encouraging 5-year durability data on laser prophylaxis in a narrow population, a clear bleeding risk signal for dual antithrombotic patients undergoing interpolation flaps, and a real-world validation of confocal microscopy as a genuine biopsy-sparing tool, particularly in kids. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next month.